What's up, y'all? Summer's got a different tempo. Everything's a little looser, brighter. One plan turns into another. You hear something, you stay a little longer. Next thing you know, you're somewhere you didn't plan to be. It's those in-between moments. That's where the ideas hit. Conversations stretch out, little memories sneak up on you. And sometimes, it's just about what's in your hand. That color, that chill. The new Tropical Butterfly Refresher from Starbucks. Guava and passion fruit flavors with mango pineapple flavored pearls. Yeah, that feels like summer before you even taste it. Funny how one small stop becomes the best part of the day. Start your summer rhythm with Starbucks. Try the new Tropical Butterfly Refresher from Starbucks.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Thaddeus McCotter, American Greatness, Human Events, is here as my colleague. And we welcome back Malcolm Hohnlein, who's been traveling. He's now back to report of the extremely moving stories in the Middle East having to do with Israel's security, Middle Eastern security. We begin with Iran. Thaddeus?
Well, Malcolm, as we see the West continuing to impose and move on sanctions regarding Iran, the Iranian regime's behavior increasingly becomes more aggressive. What can you tell us?
I think that's exactly right. It's good to be with both of you again. I think that the formula that some leading Iranian told me recently was that the worse the situation gets at home, the more aggressive Iran will be abroad. And we are seeing that being translated on many fronts right now. And not only on the domestic scene, which we'll talk about, but right now on the aggressive international scene, there was weapons, 2,000 advanced rifles that were picked up, being shipped by Iran to Yemen. American surveillance picked it up and they seized it. But it's only one of so many measures that we see happening in a global sense and in the regional sense. It's, first of all, internally, we see that Russia, it seems to be moving ahead with the sale of the Sukhoi Su-35 fighter jets by the end of this month, at least 24 that supposedly, and as well as talking about air defense systems and missile systems, helicopters, other things. And well, of course, what's interesting is that Iran's antiquated air force really has limited capability. They still have some of the MiG-29s from the 1990s, and they have some 100 that they bought from Russia and former Soviet states. Many of them do not have spare parts and therefore do not really fly. They also have some F-14 Tomcats that they bought in the 1970s when the Shah was in power from the United States. So this, the Su-35 is compatible with, competitive at least, with the F-15 and F-16, but not with the F-35s, which, you know, Israel has acquired and others in the region want to acquire. They also, we see the evidence of them putting up air defense systems, both domestically and also in and around Damascus, despite the fact that they have cut off a lot of the aid to Syria. They doubled the price of the oil they're providing to Syria. In much of Syria, there's no electricity because they don't have fuel. They don't have fuel for heat because they use generators and the Iranians are limiting the shipment to Syria. So they have we have on so many fronts where we're seeing Iran becoming more aggressive. The United States is responding with more human rights sanctions against Iranian officials who are directly involved, including two senior commanders in the IRGC and two members of the Basij. But today, the EU announced a series of sanctions, but unfortunately, they did not act as was requested by the European Assembly to designate the IRGC, Iran Revolutionary Guard, as a terrorist organization, something that Iranian dissidents and others had been pressing them for. But the Iranians threatened them, threatened the Europeans with all sorts of consequences if they, in fact, went ahead with the measure. And as is often the case, Europe backed down in the face of any resistance. And despite the fact that Iran is doing bad things in Europe anyway, they did not, disappointingly, did not adopt a resolution against the IRGC and what they stand for. So we have The situation in Sweden heating up, where they burnt a Quran in protest against the Iranian and the demonstrations, and especially, you know, Sweden is waiting to get into NATO, and they're angry at Turkey for holding it up. In France, we see the Charlie Hebdo magazine again publishing things that they found offensive. They are threatening them again. They invoked today the Salman Rushdie and said, just remember, France, what happened to Salman Rushdie, and it could happen to them. We see the number of executions going up, also a sign of their frustration and the internal dissent growing and becoming more and more serious. And most of all, now they're having several days to commemorate the third anniversary of the, quote, martyrdom of Soleimani. And they announced that then they're putting the United States on notice that they are going to be investigating them and that they are going to hold them to account. You know, the killing that took place in Iraq with the, along with an Iraqi commander, Soleimani, who was not replaced in after his assassination. And they are holding the United States and others accountable for it. It's interesting to see the threats that they are making and how they are threatening the United States and others with retribution, not just because of Soleimani, but overall, and saying that they will be destroyed. And they say that the Israel and the United States, and they are going to supply Palestinian terrorist groups such as Hamas to be able to wage war against Israel, and that they are building their capacity very soon. He said the world will witness the destruction, both the Zionist regime and the United States.
We go to the economy, Malcolm. I've lost track of when we started watching the rial, the currency in Iran. My memory is that it was somewhere in the low 100,000s. However, now there's a report of it being much higher. I believe the number you gave me was 447,000 for the rial, which is beyond calculation, 447,000. How is it that the economy functions at all with this kind of inflation, Malcolm? That would end regular business in America.
Well, it does end business in Iran. There's very little going on. They're functioning because they still sell oil off on the black market. They also are making money on transversing the Iranian, the Russian oil and supplies are going through Iran, and they are helping to facilitate sales, especially with China. So they are making money on those things, but the poverty is expanding all the time. The rial now at 447,000 to the dollar. I remember when we talked about 30,000, 40,000, when it sprung up to 70,000, we lost count after 100,000.
Yeah, we lost count, but, Malcolm. I've stopped writing it down, yes.
Right, we stopped talking because it was just getting so ludicrous. But since the demonstration started, the rial has fallen another 30%. Now, that is a message. It's a message in the international community to them. And the people are still willing to put up with all of this because they hope that the demonstrations will be successful, that they can change the regime. Although we don't hear, and the American press gets tired, I guess, of the demonstration, they are continuing. More and more people have gotten involved. And as you know, the executions in Iran are soaring, not just the ones that we read about, the four or five who've been executed so far, and the many that are still on death row waiting execution. About two-thirds of the executions are done in secret, and I think almost 600 were carried out, and only a couple of them in public in the past year. So, and that's in addition to 500 or 600 people killed by the security forces, including 34 women and 67 children. And this is building up the resentment within the country itself. There's a very long report that was published documenting over 13,000 reports from different sources and compiling the story. So Iran is the leading executor in the world, carrying out more executions than any other party, putting children in these terrible prison conditions, and is reacting more and more aggressively to the demonstrations. But it's unfortunate that the attention of the West is not put on.
I want to speak of Iran's foreign affairs that Thaddeus referred to. You tell me they're meeting with Azerbaijan, they're meeting with Saudi Arabia. To what end? What do you say to an Iranian ambassador or representative in the face of the brutality that you just illustrated?
It's all showmanship. It's nothing substantive. There's no real cooperation. Obviously, the Saudis feel threatened and can't hate. And when the Iranians keep announcing these meetings, when they are in fact meetings on the sidelines of conferences. So if the Iranian vice president runs into foreign minister of Saudi Arabia outside a conference, they list that and put it out. That they met in Brazil at a conference. When the Azeri and Iranian foreign ministers meet, it's because it's necessary for Azerbaijan to do it. It's a neighbor. They're threatening Azerbaijan all the time. As you know, there's a huge Azeri population there. So I would not put too much credence into the fact that these meetings are taking place. I see Iran more and more isolated, and the countries have long ago come to terms with what Iran's real objectives are, and they believe that they want to become a nuclear power.
And one more detail, the United Kingdom. Among our allies, the United Kingdom has been speaking of the IRGC. To what end, Malcolm? What can they do?
So they have been taking actually a stronger position, and the House of Commons voted unanimously of having the UK government proscribe the IRGC as a violent Islamist extremist organization and to designate it as a terrorist organization. For 43 years, they've been responsible for global terrorist attacks, including in Europe and the UK, and all the human rights violations in Iran. So they say in the last few years there's been a surge of activity, which was documented to the lawmakers at the UK. And now there's a growing group of EU lawmakers who want to have a similar designation. But I think the UK can no longer turn a blind eye to all of the threats and attacks that are being carried out by Iran in Europe. Not just talking about what they're doing inside Iran, but what they're doing directly and the plots, increasing number of plots that are being exposed. We saw it in Georgia, where they were trying to kill a group of Israelis, and it came out and directly tied to Iranian factions. And the same thing is true in many other places.
Thaddeus, you had a question for Malcolm.
Malcolm, there's a new list of angry countries out there, and Lebanon is on it. Why?
So Lebanon's conditions, continue to deteriorate. Hezbollah continues to exploit the country. We see large numbers of emigration from Lebanon. The court systems are on strike because they don't get funded. They end up getting paid now the equivalent of $150 a month after they were making $4,500 before the crisis. There are tankers that are sitting in the port of Beirut for weeks and weeks and not being unloaded because nobody can pay for the fuel. And in this case, it translates where you see Lebanon, Iraq, and Jordan ranked amongst the angriest countries in the world, according to a late Gallup poll. 49% report in Lebanon feelings of anger. And Lebanon has been, is in this financial crisis that wiped out 95% of the value of its currency and left most of the population below the poverty line. So that is a good reason why they feel the way they do. And more than two-thirds of Lebanese adults say they would leave if they could.
All right, we need some good news, Malcolm, all right? Dig down in your parcel there, okay? First of all, Azerbaijan, give me some good news, Malcolm.
Well, Azerbaijan is moving ahead with opening its embassy in Israel. They've long had representation, but the ambassador will be arriving in a few days, and they'll have an official opening of the embassy. And as you know, Azerbaijan and Israel have had a long, very close relationship. It was a Shiite country that was largely secular, and it's an important message and a further enhancement of, I would say, the extension on the impact of the Abraham Accords and Abraham spirit. And that is seen in a very positive light. And the meeting of the Negev 7, which continues. They met in Abu Dhabi, and they had six actual functional groups working there.
This is the Negev Forum, Malcolm. Is that what you call it, the Negev 7?
Yes, Negev Forum. The Negev Forum. They originally met, if you remember, in the Negev, the Israel's desert, and have been meeting since. There's going to be another ministerial foreign ministers meeting. I think it's a really important statement when Bahrain, Egypt, Israel, Morocco, UAE, and the U.S. get together and they talk about everything from regional integration, cooperation, agricultural cooperation, all sorts of areas, and including the Palestinian economy, although they don't participate, and Jordan doesn't participate, very disappointingly, because they say it won't come until the Palestinians come. but U.S. has been very much behind it, and I think it's really gaining a dynamic of its own.
And one more piece of good news, just 30 seconds. Benjamin Netanyahu is back in the prime minister's seat. The band is getting back together, Malcolm.
Well, it is. He's having a rough start because he's announced certain reforms of the court system because it's been a very activist court, and I think it's being exaggerated what they want to do, but it's certainly aroused the weekly demonstrations of 80,000, 100,000 people, you know, a lot of foreign criticism, although I think people should give it a chance and see what he really has in mind. But I understand the concerns that are being expressed. A lot of it has to do with the new government and a lot of public statements. But hopefully this will all resolve.
Malcolm Hoenlein, Conference of Presidents, Major American Jewish Organizations, back with us. That is McCotter. And we're looking for the Dusty One to come with his bag of tricks, Indiana Hoenlein himself. I'm John Bash.
Hey guys, Lady Luck here. Are you going on any road trips this summer? I know I'm going to be going on a bunch of road trips. And being that I'm going to be passenger princess, I love playing on SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest has all of my favorite slot games, live blackjack, live craps. Head on over to SpinQuest right now and get yourself a $30 coin pack for just $10.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Identity theft can cost more than you think. Drained investment accounts, stolen tax returns, lost wages, expenses for lawyers. It's a lot. That's why LifeLock is backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, which covers up to $1 million each for stolen funds, fees for experts and lawyers, and out-of-pocket expenses. Don't face the burden of identity theft alone. Protect your future and finances with LifeLock. Join now and save up to 30% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.
Hola, déjame preguntarte algo. ¿Quieres que tu carro dure más, que corra más suave y que rinda mejor? Tranquilo, estoy hablando de tu motor. Te tengo algo bueno, Seafoam Motor Treatment. Seafoam ayuda a que tu motor funcione más suave y dure más tiempo. Y es facilito de usar. Solo lo echas en el tanque de gasolina y listo. Déjalo trabajar mientras manejas. Sin pasos extras ni visitas al mecánico. Si tu carro anda medio raro, temblando en el rally sin fuerza, gastando gasolina como cafecito por la ventanita, puede que sea hora. Seafoam es tu primer paso sencillo para recuperar ese rendimiento, para que rinda como debe ser, suave y con power. Y esto no es nuevo. Seafoam ha sido confiado por mecánicos por más de 75 años. ¡75 años! Eso es mucha confianza, mi gente. Y por eso, millones de conductores lo usan todos los días para mantener sus motores fuertes. Agarra una lata de Seafoam hoy en tu tienda de autopartes favorita y pa'lante con confianza.